First, President Trump's asylum ban has been put on hold by a federal court. Late last night, a San Francisco judge ruled that the ban violates existing law and would cause irreparable harm to immigrants.
Lawyers from the Justice Department insisted that the president has the power to require asylum seekers to present themselves at official ports of entry. But plaintiffs, including the American Civil Liberties Union and the Southern Poverty Law Center, argued that as long as someone makes it to the U.S., even illegally, they can apply for asylum.
The judge's ruling will stay in effect for a month. It comes as the migrant caravan from Central America continues to approach the U.S.-Mexico border. Elise Cohen is an assistant professor of political science at UW-Green Bay's Sheboygan and Manitowoc campuses. Elise, welcome back to Central Time.
Great to be with you.
So remind us really quickly what the Trump administration's asylum ban was covering.
Yeah, so on November 9th, the Trump administration used what's called a presidential proclamation, one of the types of executive action that presidents can use. And what he did was try to circumvent some of the laws allowing anyone on U.S. territory, even if they crossed irregularly or illegally, to claim asylum. So basically this order or proclamation, I should say, spelled out that the president has the authority if someone is detrimental to the interests of the United States under federal law to use that power to prevent their entry. So this would really be a dramatic change in asylum laws if this had gone through.
Now, why does the Justice Department, it's been arguing that the president has the authority to enforce this. Why are they taking this stance?
Well, the stand of the Justice Department and the Trump administration and Department of Homeland Security focuses on the national security threat posed by illegal immigrants entering along the southern border, particularly in light of the so-called migrant caravan that has been comprised of Central Americans making their way up through Mexico towards the southern border of the U.S. This national security kind of threat language has been used by the administration and by those agencies. They've also used the language of the system being broken and overwhelmed, that the asylum system just cannot handle the sheer number of people that apply for asylum every year. So we see kind of a mixture of reasons, both focusing on the threat these people may pose as well as the system itself being overburdened.
Now, there's a lot of confusion over how people can apply or seek asylum when they do come into U.S. ports of entry. Can you clarify what some of, some of the confusion is when it comes to how people seek asylum?
Yeah, that's a great question. You're absolutely right. I think people confuse asylum with immigration in general. So to qualify for asylum, the person must prove a well-founded fear of persecution. This can be based on race, religion, nationality, political beliefs, or their membership in some kind of social group. In order to request asylum, the way we do it in the United States is you must be present in the U.S. or at an official entry point. Somehow on U.S. territory. Refugees are a little different. We only take refugees that have been vetted already by the United Nations and are coming from overseas. So refugees go through a different process. But for those asylees or potential asylees, asylum seekers we would call them, they would already be on the territory or at one of those border checkpoints, and they would then go to an officer for screening, what is called a credible fear interview, to see if they can pass that initial interview threshold of meeting those qualifications.
We are talking to Elise Cohen right now. She's an assistant professor of political science at UW-Green Bay's Sheboygan and Manitowoc campuses, and she's with us to talk about a recent asylum ban put in place by the Trump administration that was basically put on hold by a San Francisco-based judge. And let's take a look at that judge. I guess the first question is it a surprise that the federal judge based in San Francisco blocked the ban?
It's not too much of a surprise. The judge was appointed by Obama during the Obama administration. And we know that the travel ban, which of course was very controversial from last year's executive action under President Trump, also initially had injunctions at this sort of lower federal court level, district level. So if we would see a similar path, we might expect the Trump administration to appeal this decision just as it did with those previous injunctions of its travel ban or the different versions of them. The Supreme Court upheld the travel ban this summer, right? So there is some speculation that if they would appeal this and it would make its way all the way up to the Supreme Court in the future, what kind of ruling might we see moving forward on this case?
Now, you mentioned that, with the travel ban that was pretty controversial, lower federal courts challenged it. They put a stay on it. It eventually was not approved, but it was upheld by the Supreme Court. What tactics do you think the Trump administration and the Justice Department will take, as this continues? Because this is only on hold for about a month.
Yeah, you're exactly right. It's only until December 19th, I believe, that we have this temporary injunction. One thing that the Trump administration has continued to emphasize and even cites directly in the presidential proclamation issued earlier this month is that the Immigration and Nationality Act, that major set of federal laws that govern our immigration system right now, specifies that the president does have the authority to prevent the entry of any alien if it is, quote, detrimental to the interests of the United States. And that's kind of vague, right? That's sort of ambiguous, not exactly clear, who gets to decide and what those criteria are. In the travel ban case, the very close decision, the 5-4 decision, the justices in the majority ended up thinking that the president really didn't have to prove detailed, reasoned bases for the danger or being detrimental to those interests. So I think the Trump administration would see, well, we have the potential once again to use that broad executive power given to us in the Immigration and Nationality Act to claim that these Central American migrants crossing through the southern border are detrimental to the interests of the United States.
Well, getting back to that that so-called migrant caravan, it was dominating the news pretty much up until the midterm election. Homeland Security officials say some 6,000 people are waiting to be processed at ports of entry along the border from San Diego, with more on the way. What exactly, so much as you can, is happening at the southern border?
Yes, I've heard the same thing that you're reporting, that there are thousands of these Central American migrants kind of waiting in a crowded sports complex and some sort of squalid shelters in parts of Mexico that are near the border entry points. One thing to think about in terms of the executive proclamation, he's saying that you cannot get asylum if you go irregularly, meaning you go between ports of entry. But for some people, because of the long wait time at the official ports of entry, there's speculation that that's actually what's sort of driving them to go cross illegally or irregularly. There's also a lack of understanding that some of these migrants may have, where they believe you can only claim asylum if you're physically on the territory of the U.S. So they may believe that you have to cross in whatever means possible in order to even make the asylum claim, which is not true, but that could be part of the story. And then finally, we've heard some reports from human rights groups that even at the official ports of entry, the Border Patrol is kind of turning people away or just delaying their entry to somehow, again, deter them from entering and claiming asylum.
Now, immigration, refugees, all this has been part of the political conversation as of late. It has been pretty central to some of the some of the executive orders that the president has put out. Why do you think that this has suddenly, or not even suddenly, but why do you think this has become such a central figure in our sort of political discourse right now?
Oh, that's a really great point. In studying the politics of immigration and refugees, we can see this has become so politicized, and you're absolutely right. It's kind of like peak politicization, especially on things like refugees and asylum, which there used to be pretty broad bipartisan support for refugees and asylum seekers. But in this context, we see it with the politicization of the zero-tolerance immigration stance of the Department of Justice and the Trump administration. That resulted earlier this year in the separation of families. We've seen efforts to bypass detention restrictions. How long can you detain asylum seekers and families and children? even quotas, trying to force immigration judges to hear those asylum cases much more quickly. So I think we can put this in the bigger picture of asylum and refugees in these humanitarian categories of immigration protection being lumped in with the broader picture of the immigration debate in this country, where political polarization, unfortunately, has spilled over and made some of those humanitarian forms of protection politicized that once were bipartisan in terms of their support.
You just mentioned that this has had sort of broad bipartisan support in the past. Oh, you know, can we get back to that?
Yeah, that's a really challenging question. I think that when we've seen the last attempts of Congress to pass immigration reform, something that, you know, would actually fulfill the Constitution's vision that Congress would make these kinds of immigration laws rather than presidents issuing all these proclamations and executive orders. We've seen that both times in sort of the mid-2000s and then again in 2014, because our political polarization has affected our members of Congress, we haven't been able to reach the consensus needed for any of those immigration reform bills to make it out. Even this summer, when they were trying on another one, we saw that the Republicans were divided into two camps, the so-called hardliners that did not want to see any path for legal status for people that were undocumented, and the more moderate Republicans that were willing to give a lot on border patrol and increased security and fencing, but did want to see a path for legal status, as most Americans do in public opinion polls. So it seems like even the Republican Party just has such sharp divisions right now between the so-called hardliners and moderates over immigration that it's unlikely we would get that law coming through anytime soon.
We have just about 30 seconds left, Elise. So final question, what are you going to be watching for as with the situation, especially with the caravan and the asylum ban? What are you watching for as this plays out?
What I'm really interested in is if the Trump administration will take this all the way up and continue to appeal it and fight this case moving forward. There is a provision of the Immigration and Nationality Act that says there are exceptions to any alien being able to apply for asylum, even if they didn't go through the port of arrival, on, quote, reasonable grounds for regarding them as a danger to the security of the U.S. So I'm really going to be watching to see how the courts respond to that argument and if the Trump administration is able to use that to justify its action.
Elise, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks so much. Great to be with you.
Elise Cohen is an assistant professor of political science at UW-Green Bay's Sheboygan and Manitowoc campuses. We talked with her about the future of President Trump's asylum ban after a federal judge put it on hold last night.